welcome back to Academy of Blues. My name is Maddie, I'm your host for today, and I'm joined by the one and the only, my co-host with the most, Daniel Gonzalez. Daniel, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful now that we are recording again. How are you doing?
I am great. It's awesome to be back talking all things Chelsea, catching up, and looking forward to what seems like it's going to be a very tense and exciting end to the season that we've had. This season that just had incredible highs and lows. But that means some things, that usually means some good things when it comes to Chelsea. So we'll get to talk about that. I'm quickly just going to run through everything that we're going to kind of touch on today, and then we'll get right into it. So because we've been gone for so long, I want us to kind of talk about this season, the past 4 or 5 months in the life of Chelsea Football Club and their fans, really. So to give us a quick recap of what's happened in the absence of Academy of Blues, Chelsea have gone on this incredible run of 17 games unbeaten that followed the defeat to Liverpool at home in September. And it included teams like Sevilla, Man United, Tottenham, a lot of big teams. At the end of the 17 games...
Sorry, you were talking about big teams, but you accidentally said Tottenham in that. I just wanted to let you know.
Well done. Well played. Well played. By the way, at some point, we're going to have to talk about how they got kicked out of the Europa League, because I think it's just glorious.
Just beautiful. That's a Chelsea story, too.
So 17 games unbeaten, and then the first week of December, Chelsea lose 1-0 away to Everton and Carlo Ancelotti. That starts a very bad run of form for the team, a run of form that leads Frank Lampard to get sacked. The atmosphere in the squad becomes very, very low and toxic, according to some of the publications and papers and in the news. The fan base is pretty much exactly like what's going on within the club and within the team. It's very toxic. You have a very divided fan base, Lampard in, Lampard out. Some fans demanding that certain players be sold, and others backing the players and saying it was Lampard's fault. This leaves us in 9th place in the Premier League, and top 4 seemed very unlikely at that point. And so with Frank Lampard getting sacked, the board very quickly goes on to hire Thomas Tuchel, who, since he's come into the role, has taken Chelsea on a 14-game unbeaten streak where we have conceded only 2 goals. 2 goals in 14 games. That is one of the most incredible runs of just clean sheets and defensive solidity that I've ever witnessed as a Chelsea fan. So we're going to get to talk about that a little bit. And that has left us 4th in the league with, I believe it's 10 games to play. That has left us
9 games.
That has left us 4th in the league with 9 games left to play, and into the semifinals of the FA Cup, where we are going to face Pep Guardiola's Man City, and into the quarterfinals of the Champions League, where we will play FC Porto. So clearly, it's a season that started with a lot of excitement, with the summer transfers coming in. We had Thiago Silva and Ben Chilwell and Timo Werner and Kai Havertz and Hakim Ziyech and Edouard Mendy. 6 signings that were absolutely perfect. I remember you and I were chatting in this podcast, and you were saying that your ideal summer transfer business by Chelsea would include a goalkeeper, a left back, a central defender, and I believe an attacking midfielder and a forward, or I might be wrong with that. But a lot of the things that were in your wish list, they were 100% delivered by the board. And so clearly the season was off to a very exciting start for us and for Chelsea fans.
Oh, man. Just looking back on this, it's been such a long season. For example, I had completely forgotten about the 4-0 Sevilla game that we'd played. That had just slipped my mind. And I just went back and watched the highlights yesterday, just to watch Giroud work his magic, and that doesn't even feel like the same season. For the season has been so up and down and sideways and in circles that I can't believe. And we're still in it. We're still not even done. There's so much left to go. In terms of entertainment, this is definitely the most exciting season as a Chelsea fan that I've had, probably ever. Not in terms of success. That 16-17 season, last time we won the league, definitely the most successful. But this has the most back and forth and excitement within it.
Yeah, I think this season definitely has had some of the highest of the highs and definitely the lowest of the lows with the run that we were in and with Frank Lampard getting the chop. It seemed like everything was going right when we were on that 17-game unbeaten streak between, I want to say, end of September, I believe September 23rd was our first win And then I remember we played Leeds at home in the first week of December. And when we played in that game, actually, we won it. And we ended up going top in the Premier League for a few hours or for a day or whatever. It seemed like everything was going right. And it felt like we weren't even going to lose a single game. So, I mean, what happened?
I probably didn't realize this at the time, or maybe I did. I don't know. Someone can call me out if they want to. But there's a lot of time during that unbeaten run. It wasn't exactly the greatest unbeaten run. That do you remember when the Manchester United manager, whose name I cannot pronounce and I will not try. I can try, but I don't want to. When he came in and he had that unbeaten streak with United, when he comes in, that everyone looks back and says, oh, what a great, it's unbeaten. Unbeaten streak is not a winning streak. It is just not losing games. Not losing games isn't exactly the goal for a lot of these big clubs. And for a lot of those games, we were not the better team in some of those. I believe in that Leeds game. That was one of the, might not have been the Leeds game. There was definitely the West Ham, the 3-0 West Ham game. That was the worst 3-0 that I have seen. That was definitely not a game that you got to the end of it and felt that was a deserved 3-0 win. And that's a lot of the games either felt like that, or we were crushing a lower opposition with not as much funds as Chelsea to buy these big names. And for a while, I don't think we even had beaten a team in the top half of the Premier League. And so it was kind of like a masking over of the problems that Chelsea did have that you could see once we were watching the game, such as still having some defensive liabilities despite these signings. I mean, the attack worked when that was the focus of the game, when we threw everything at the attack. And now we can see that these attacking players didn't really have, they don't have that cohesive gel, because now that we are focusing on a more balanced system, they aren't able to like score more than 2 goals a game.
Right. We're going to talk about that balance system soon when we get to the more recent stuff that's been happening. But in that run, I do remember hearing this criticism of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the name you can't pronounce, which apparently I can. I do remember hearing this criticism that he was just a manager who just happened to have this really good group of players. And any manager who's got that group of players will for sure get some wins. The team will not always play great. It won't always be convincing, but those players will bail him out. They will get him wins. And so I remember thinking the exact same thing about Frank Lampard. Now, Frank Lampard, just to be clear, is my favorite player of all time. The only one who comes anywhere close to him is Eden Hazard, and Eden Hazard still falls short. Frank Lampard is one of the reasons that I fell in love with Chelsea. To me, I was almost always on his side, blindly on his side for so long. But I do remember hearing some of those criticism of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and thinking, yeah, the exact same thing could be said about Lampard too, because we were winning games against Sheffield United when they were, you know, they still are rock bottom in the Premier League. And there were still games that we should have won that we didn't in that run of 17 games. I do remember, however, though, there was so much excitement in the fan base and in other Chelsea podcasts and YouTube channels and everything else that everyone was saying, like, we may never lose a game again. To which, you know, Lampard did say, like, this team isn't ready to compete. This team isn't, it's not there yet. It's a work in progress. And you can definitely see some of the problems that we had, because there was a little bit of fluidity that the team discovered as we went from the 4-2-3-1 that he started the season with to the 4-3-3. But it's almost like we got found out. The other teams discovered how to stop that threat and how to stop the runners from midfield. And Everton played a very simple, but, you know, they played to their strengths with a low defensive block, high balls over the top towards DCL, the Dominic Calvert-Lewin, DCL.
DCL. I've never DCL. Heard anyone call him DCL. Is that a thing?
Oh, you've just heard it here now.
We start trends here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, it's insane how quickly it went from good to very, very bad. And I think that's a testament to the fact that there were a lot of problems that we weren't seeing because we just kept racking up points. But at the same time, there were one or two just absolutely glorious performances, like the performance against Sevilla away. And just a quick side note, one of my favorite things about that game was there was such an insane moment where every single like player's role that touched the ball was completely reversed. So Frank Lampard was very heavy on and serious about playing out from the back. But that one moment when I think it was for Giroud's third goal, we didn't play it from the back. Passed it around the back a couple of times, sucked them out, and then Mendy plays a long ball over the top. When he does that, typically it's Olivier Giroud who wins the header. This time it wasn't. It was Hakim Ziyech who wins it. Ziyech then, he lays it off to this dude running on the wing. Who's running on the wing, you ask? It's not a winger. It's N'Golo Kante. And N'Golo Kante runs down the wing, and he puts in this peach of a cross. I mean, I don't think we've seen a better cross than that one this season. And he just puts it on a plate for Olivier Giroud, and he finishes it with, you know, with just a classic striker's instinct. And it's what he's good at, running onto a cross. So just want to mention that that was definitely one of the highlights of the season. No matter what happens, I'll always remember that. But yeah, to think that we went from such momentum and incredible highs to such a horrible and negative December that ended up with Frank Lampard being sacked, it was kind of awful. How did you react to the sacking of Frank Lampard?
At that point, it was almost inevitable. You could really see it in his mood. You can see that every single game, his eyebrows just gone lower and lower on his face whenever things would happen. And even when we'd score, it almost looked like a relief sort of celebration, more than a joyous one for him. And you could see it in the mood of the players, in the mood of him, and in the results. Confidence was so low at that time that I remember going to watch games and thinking, if we draw, I will be happy. If we don't look awful during this game, there was just nothing in the squad. And to the point that I think it was Fulham that we had played. I was overjoyed with that win. Was it Fulham? Am I going crazy?
Yeah. I remember you texting me about it. And I remember you texting me Fulham had to go down to 10 men for us to look decent.
Yeah. I was not confident in this team in the slightest. And yeah, I don't want to say it's not a slight against Frank Lampard, because this is the squad that he built. We can't say that, oh, he didn't have a transfer window. He didn't get the players he wanted. He got Chilwell, which was that main one. He didn't get Rice, but he got almost everything else that he would have wanted. He got some of the best attacking talents in the world. And they were almost kind of reduced to shells of their former selves during that time. And it was just so disheartening to watch. And it was almost something that you can kind of see coming from far away with the manager with so little experience. And you're in this strange situation where you can't really blame Lampard for everything that was going on, because he didn't have that experience managing any big clubs. He didn't work his way up, and everyone kind of knew that he got the job because he was this Chelsea legend. But he did do a great job when he was here to begin with. He like brought in all these youth players into the squad. And so overall, I kind of call Lampard's managerial stint, his first stint at Chelsea, a mixed bag of success. And I do think he has room to come back and become a better manager and come back and be the Lampard manager that we know he can be.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, with your assessment of Frank Lampard's first managerial stint at Chelsea. And listen,
I do think that I have a little bit more objectivity when it comes to Lampard as a manager, because I didn't watch him play live. And I know how much he likes him. Actually, no, I might have seen him in an MLS game. So I think that might be the one time I saw him live.
Yeah, you probably, it's your loss, really. It's your loss. You literally got the worst of Frank Lampard as a player. And that's all I have to remember him by as a player. But that's okay. I remember waking up to the news that he was sacked. I was genuinely heartbroken. It felt like we lost the final, or it felt like, I don't know, but it was not a good day. I remember when he first got hired, you and I weren't doing the podcast at the time. But I remember either telling this to you or my wife. Sometimes I blur the lines for who I'm talking to.
That's a compliment for me.
You.
Thank you. And her. Probably not for her, though.
But I do remember saying this. I remember saying, if the track record that we have with our managers is that every single one of them ends horribly. There's never been a manager that's like left in the way that, say, Sir Alex Ferguson has left, or anything even remotely close to that. So every Chelsea manager gets sacked. And I do remember saying, this guy is like, he's been my favorite player and, you know, my hero when I was a kid. That if this club mistreats him and fires him, it's going to be hard for me to feel that way about Chelsea after that. Thankfully, I think I've grown in my love for the club as much as, you know, I have, because I've been able to kind of just have a little bit of reason here and there to be like, well, I see this and that. And then just the interesting thing about it for me was it really felt like someone had died almost, because all the, you know, Chelsea podcasts, YouTube channels and different outlets, they were just literally mourning the release of Frank Lampard. And then Roman Abramovich came out and gave a statement, which he like never, ever does. And that just goes to show how much he meant to the club, to the fans, and all that stuff. And so, though it was hard, I'm completely seeing that it was absolutely the right decision, because if he had stayed through the end of the season, no way would we be in the quarters of the Champions League. No way would we'd probably be in the semifinal of the FA Cup, because we haven't really played anybody who's worthy of beating us. And we definitely wouldn't be in the top four when it comes to the Premier League, which is probably the most important thing, because in order to attract the right players, in order to keep competing on the levels that we are, we do need to consistently be in the Champions League and not in and out of it. And so ultimately, I think that his time will be remembered by the youth, the revolution of the youth that he's kind of ushered in. And it was just so symbolic that somebody who loved and played for the club and spent so much time there would be the one to look at the youth, bring them up, give them their debuts, and make them these professionals that they are in many ways. And I think like the, probably the largest testament to that is the fact that this past Sunday when we played against Sheffield United with our captain and vice captain gone, it was, you know, it was Mason Mount who captained the side. So I think that's, if there is a Frank Lampard legacy from his managerial time, that's definitely one of those things. That could also just be me looking at it and trying to find as many positives as possible.
If Frank Lampard's legacy is giving the first start and the first captaincy to Mason Mount that he's going to carry on throughout his Chelsea career, I mean, that's incredible. I'll take that. It's almost sad, though, now that I really think about it, that out of those players, out of Mason Mount, Reece James, Tammy, Tomori, and those were the main ones that kind of came through with the youth, that it seems like it's going to be Mason Mount and Reece James are the only ones left.
I don't fully disagree, but I somewhat disagree, because I think Hudson-Odoi is so much more likely to stay now than he was before. Now, in truth, Mauricio Sarri had started to bring him up, so he's not necessarily a Frank Lampard revolution player, youth revolution player, if you will. But I think that if it wasn't for how absolutely fantastic N'Golo Kanté, Jorginho, and Kovacic have been, I think we would have seen a lot more of Billy Gilmore over the past few weeks and months. And then besides those two, Tammy Abraham is probably the one player that I fear for the most, because poor Tammy just can't get a kick, man. He just can't get a kick in. And he started twice under Thomas Tuchel in the Premier League. Both times he's been subbed off at halftime. And immediately after the second time that it happened, he got injured, and it's kept him out of the side for as long as it has. So, and with all the talk of, you know, the freaking Terminator potentially coming to join us in the summer.
God, I don't even want to start hoping for that. That is too much. I'll take it, but that's too much.
Yeah, I'll take it, but it won't happen.
Something I do want to note is obviously we've been on a great run of form recently. Thomas Tuchel has given so much to the side, like so much defensive stability, changing to that three at the back, which I thought we'd seen the last of, but it's back. I thought we'd seen the last of Marcos Alonso, but he's also back. But the last time we scored more than two goals in a match was Frank Lampard's last game in charge. What is going on?
So with Thomas Tuchel, okay, let's go back to Antonio Conte's first season. We had a decent start. We stumbled through some games. I remember we either tied or lost against Liverpool. And then we had that famous Arsenal game where we were losing 3-0 at halftime. I think he pulls out Cesc Fabregas and goes to 3-4-3 at halftime. And that basically ends up changing our season. And he came out and said that if you want to win anything, if you want to win games, if you want to win championships, etc., you need to start with a very solid backline. You need to start with a team that doesn't concede and give away silly goals. And that's exactly what he did. Although, because he had Eden Hazard in his prime, Diego Costa in his prime, if we had three chances in a game, maybe two of them would go in. But essentially, he really focused on the defensive part of our team and made sure that we were incredibly, incredibly hard to beat before he started worrying about the offense. With Thomas Tuchel, he's doing pretty much the exact same thing. The interesting thing about Tuchel and his experience with this Chelsea team is it almost feels like he's got a defensive line that doesn't know how to play in a back four, and he's got an offensive line that doesn't know how to play in a 3-4-2-1 or in a 3-4-1-2 or whatever the front three look like, which is really frustrating because he's having to sacrifice defensive solidity for just that little bit of magic and efficiency up top. And so it's like even games that we have over 70% possession, we still don't create enough chances. And the ones that we do create, we don't put them away, which can be very frustrating at times. But at the same time, we have to give him credit where it's due, because there's been games where we're only 1-0 up and it could be the 85th minute. And I'm like, this is the calmest I've ever been with a 1-0 lead, because what this Thomas Tuchel system does is it really stifles the opposition from getting anywhere near the ball. And every time they get it, we are on them like bloodhounds. We just go hunting for the ball in packs, which is insane. And it works because he's built it that way. What that does to the opposition is, with the little time that they have with the ball before they get attacked by all these Chelsea players, they have to do so much more with that little time that they have. And so it puts more pressure on them, on the forwards and midfielders of that other team. And so in a weird way, a lot of the teams that we've been playing haven't been playing well against us, but it's not because they weren't set up well, it's because we made them not play well with all the pressure and with all the forward thinking of our team. So going back to why we're not scoring so many goals, it just feels like he's got a backline that doesn't want to work in a, you know, in a line of four, and a front line that doesn't want to work in a more traditional three up top. Because with wingbacks, he is using those wingbacks to give us width down the line, down the wing, and using those two inside forwards that are, you know, next to the main striker. He's using them as almost like these auxiliary midfielders slash wingers slash forwards that are just kind of roaming in the half spaces. But I think that things will click. I think it will take time. I'm so curious to see what would happen if he actually had preseason and enough amount of time with the team, because everything that he's done up until now has been done with like 2 days of training, a game, 2 days of training, rest day, a game. And so it's incredible that he's got them this organized, or at least half the team is this organized defensively. So, yeah.
Something that that I think that he's done super well is just build the system around the actual players that we have. You wouldn't look at Chelsea's squad, and aside from maybe Conte, there's nobody in our squad that's the best or even near the best in their position in the Premier League. We don't have the best strikers. We don't have the best wingers. We don't have the best defenders. We don't have the best right backs, left backs. I mean, Azpilicueta is always underrated. But aside from that, we don't have anybody that you would throw in and say, okay, these players are like the best in their positions. We don't have like the De Gea's or the Van Dijk's or the Agüero's or anything like that. But he took what he did have, and he's playing to every single, as much as he can, he's playing to their strengths with the system that he set up. Christensen can't play in a back four. It just doesn't seem possible for him. It seems like the only system he understands is he's very specialized in that back three, but he's great at that back three. The same goes for Marcos Alonso.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that, and it's something I hope that we don't have to rely on, is trying to... It's always the conversation between managers is whether you build a team based on the players you have or whether you incorporate your system and buy players to fit that. And some teams don't have the luxury of doing that. And some teams like Man City can just bring Guardiola and give him whoever he wants. And it's kind of, I feel like at right now we're at an impasse with Chelsea. Is next summer is going to be very like, do we fill in gaps? Are we aiming for a specific system? Are we going to continue with this back three? Are we going to continue with, are we going to just try to buy players that can bring magic like Hazard's or Diego Costa's of 2016, 2017? Or are we going to try to tweak the system to give the attacking players we do have more of an opportunity? And so I'm predicting that this season mostly goes the same way it's been going at the moment. Defensive solidity, attacking kind of getting lucky with their penalties and their own goals and such, and we're going to see out the season as it is. But I'm really, really curious to see where the board and Tuchel go from here.
Yeah, I do fear that they give him the Antonio Conte treatment, which is, well, you've done such a great job with this group of players that we're not going to invest in the summer, or we're not going to get you who you're actually asking for. That could happen, although it feels unlikely. One of the advantages that we have with the way that this season is ending is that our players are a lot more desirable now than they were before Tuchel came in. So teams would have been insane to invest in Marcos Alonso, Emerson Palmieri, Jorginho, or Christensen, any of those players, and even Kepa. Teams would have taken a huge risk then to go for those players. But with Tuchel coming in to restore a lot of these players into the team for this season, it doesn't necessarily mean that those players will be there next season. It just means that now their value is retained a little bit longer, so that, you know, we're able to get maybe, I don't know, 20 million for Marcos Alonso or 15 million for whoever. And that really adds up, because it also gets them off the wage bill. It, you know, gives you 15, 20, 25 million here and there to be able to, you know, add that up and then
pocket make a big change. Just find one really good kid who plays soccer and become his agent, and it'll set you up for life.
Honestly, might be my kid. You never know. I don't know. I haven't found him yet. So I completely agree with you in the sense that I think between now and the end of the season, I would not be surprised if our biggest win of the season or our biggest win of the run-in is something like 2-0. Or maybe if we're like being really good with our chances, like 3-0. I would not expect to see a 4-0, 5-0, or anything crazy like that this season. However, I also don't see us conceding many goals. And so I think that we'll do really well to just keep that balance of get one or two, don't concede, or get one or two more than whatever the opposition scores. And I'm happy with that. I'm fine with that. The thing that I want the most is a top four finish and obviously Champions League, but that is a huge ask. However,
hey, if we're moving on to Champions League,
yes, let's.
I'm pretty happy with this. I don't want to sound overconfident. I want to always say, you know, every team that's here now is in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. They're good teams. But
yep.
We can't deny that this was a pretty lucky draw on this side of the bracket.
It's perfectly balanced, as all things should be, because in the FA Cup semifinal, out of the three teams that we could have drawn, Leicester, Southampton, and Man City, we got the hardest draw we could have gotten, Man City. That being said, I think that, one, I would rather face... I'm going to the FA Cup for a quick second, and then I'm going to go back to the Champions League. One, I would rather face Man City in the semifinal than the final of the FA Cup. The reason being, they are really good at winning finals, Man City. Pep Guardiola just loves his domestic competitions, and he has really owned them over the past few seasons. And so if we're going to get them out, I'd rather get them out then. And if we're going into the FA Cup final with the momentum of being this incredibly solid team that defeated Pep Guardiola's Man City, I think we'll win it. Basically, the semifinal is the final. I think the winner of that, of the semifinal that we're in, is going to be the winner of the FA Cup. With the Champions League, yeah, incredibly lucky and fortunate to be drawn A, against Porto, and B, on the side of the bracket that we were drawn on, because we get to avoid PSG, Bayern Munich, and Manchester City until the final, if we get there, which is incredible, because I it would be hard for me to see us beating any of those teams over two legs, but over one leg in a Champions League final, I'm confident.
The only catch with that is that I almost wish we had drawn Dortmund just so we can get Holland to see Chelsea and kind of just like, this is a nice stadium, I like this place, you know, and kind of get used to it. Unfortunately, he gets to have that face-to-face time with Guardiola before anything, but that's a small thing. I'll take the Champions League side that we're on. The one qualm I do, and the second qualm I mean that I do have, is that when we, if you remember when we drew Atletico, I don't know about you, I had no hope in that. Our last game of the group stage ended in that draw against Krasnodar, which did not look very good on our squad. And that's when we were kind of starting our downhill momentum. And Atletico were at the top of the world, top of La Liga. They were like a number of points ahead of Barca and Real. That looked like a surefire win for them. It felt like Bayern Munich last year all over again. But things can change so fast in soccer. And so who knows, by the time we get to those games, I mean, Porto, I don't think there's enough time for things to swing too much. But by the time we get to that Liverpool Real, it could be a whole different game by then.
It could. Yeah, it could. And I think with drawing Atleti in the round of 16, that was definitely the worst team that we could have faced. And we did. It's super impressive how we got through both legs, made them look like Burnley, really. Suarez, Chris Wood. João Felix, Dwight McNeil.
Oh, same thing. Exactly the same players.
Yeah. And so the thing about, and I don't think Thomas Tuchel would allow this to happen. The thing about drawing a team like FC Porto is sometimes it can be, it can work against you to have a team that you're expected to beat because there's more pressure on you and players aren't as pumped, as focused for those games as they should be and could be. Although we will get to see, you know, more of what kind of manager Thomas Tuchel is with how he prepares his team, the mentality that they come into the game with, etc. But when you do look at Chelsea against FC Porto purely on a talent level, you know, we have their number. When you look at them on a coaching level, we have their number. Also, the ironic thing is that Mason Mount was dubbed Frank Lampard's son throughout his entire Chelsea career when he was working under Frank Lampard. But FC Porto, their manager, literally has his son playing and starting in that team every single week. So I think that's pretty funny. But I'm confident about that one. What happens after that? I have no idea. Liverpool and Real Madrid, it'll be really interesting to see which one of them goes through. My bet is on Liverpool because though they've been awful in the league, they've been very solid in the Champions League. And Premier League and Champions League games are just so vastly different. And Liverpool, for the most part, Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool is a cup side. They do know how to get through cup competitions. And so I wouldn't be surprised if it ends up being Chelsea against Liverpool in the Champions League final, which I'm like, bring it on. Because
semi-final. What did I say? That would be incredible. Right. I would be surprised if that happened.
Yeah.
Something funky's going on. Some WandaVision weirdest.
The great thing for Chelsea fans at this point is that this season is getting more and more exciting as it goes. It looks like when we come back from international break, Thiago Silva should be fit and available for selection. And he's going to be huge just to have him in those big games, to have him in the, just to have this incredible professional who reads the game well, to have him back. It's only going to be a positive thing for the likes of Christensen and Rudiger and Zuma who play alongside him, even though they have done an incredible job in his absence to cover for him and keep them defensive lines so strong.
Top two moments of the season.
Yeah.
Mason Mount captaining the side. Thiago Silva celebration. Those are my top two moments. And that I something I love so much about that celebration is that he's not even been here a year, and you can just tell how much he's like bonded with the squad and how much he loves to see them play. And even if he's not able to get back into the starting 11, he seems like a good presence to have in the locker room to be there for Tuchel's talks to the team. And I think that he just brings a lot of that experience and level-headedness to the squad.
Absolutely. Although I did fear that he would injure himself as he was going up and down those stairs celebrating.
It almost looked a little awkward.
But it was, yeah, it did. It did. He couldn't move. Like if you showed me that video and I had no idea who he is, and you told me that's just some drunk dude at a soccer game who's like a season ticket holder who's there every week, I would have 100% believed you. If you told me that's one of the best defenders in the world, I'd have been like, come on.
Come on. I can't jump properly. What's he going to do in a corner?
But it is great to see how much he's bought into the vision and how he's invested in that team. I hope that he stays next season. Even if he doesn't play as many games as he's been playing, I think his presence could be really, really good for a lot of our players, including maybe Tomori, who may or may not come back. So very exciting end to the season. And my hope is that you and I will get to witness and commentate and give our thoughts on it. I think for now, this is a good place to end. I want us to do another episode next week that will look at the future slash, you know, the upcoming few games that we have in more in depth. Just want to give you a heads up that beginning next week and moving forward, we plan to record our episodes typically on Tuesdays and release them on Wednesdays. Usually that will be, you know, a review of the game that just happened and maybe a preview of the game that's upcoming next. But sometimes obviously the team plays on Wednesdays, and when that happens, we will record on Wednesday night and release it the following morning. And so you can expect our episodes to drop typically on Wednesdays and sometimes on Thursdays. With that said, Daniel, this is where we're going to end. Would you like to say anything to our listeners and to me or to me?
To you, I'd like to say make sure to follow us on Instagram and email us.
What's our handle? I don't even know what our handle
it's
is.
It's Academy of Blues Academy of
just
Blues.
Just like the name of our podcast.
Right, exactly. We managed to get that one. We had to pay a guy off. He was holding on to it.
Okay.
Took me a long time
to save
Roman
up that Abramovich?
I'm actually funding the transfer of Holland. So that's how much he charged
me. Well, at least now we know. Now we know where his money comes from.
Yeah, and where mine is gone. That's why I'm poor now. Hit us with any questions, comments, suggestions, insults, whatever you'd like. We're open to anything. Email us at academyofblues@gmail.com. And yeah, to our listeners, thank you for listening. It's been a lot of fun. I hope you had fun listening to us.
Yes, I hope you had as much fun listening as we had talking and recording this, and hopefully editing it too.
That's the best part. That's the most fun part.
Yes. Yes, listening to ourselves and realizing we said some absolutely whack things.
Hot takes.
Yes. You didn't have a hot take today, but that's fine. I'm not going to make you. No, I will make you. Go, hot take right now. Come up with one. You have 10 seconds.
My favorite game of all time is the West Brom game in 2016. I think it was December of 2016, where Diego Costa absolutely bullies one of the defenders and managed to snatch a goal out of that game to give us a 1-0 win that made me convinced we were going to win the title.
Okay. Well, if that's not a hot take, I don't know what is. With that, thank you for joining us and thank you for listening. I've been Maddie.
I've been Daniel.
And this has been Academy of Blues, or rather, the return of Academy of Blues.